I've not, like, been silenced, like, capital S, but, like it's at Twitter's discretion whether or not I'm allowed, like, to, like, play by their rules.
Hi, I'm Madison Malone Kircher.
And I'm Rachel Hampton, and you're listening to ICYMI.
In case you missed it.
Slate's podcast about internet culture.
So, Donald Trump. Still banned from Facebook. I know. Sorry. What a horrible way to start up. All of our listeners just turned off the episode.
Honestly, I just tuned out of my own brain.
It is big news in the internet world. Facebook has upheld a decision to keep Trump banned from the platform.
The first good thing Facebook has perhaps done ever in their entire life. What's wild is that it's not even technically their final decision. Trump might be back on Facebook in 6 months.
Trump's ban from mainstream social platforms like Facebook, and he's also banned from Twitter. Frankly, I feel like this poses a lot more questions than it provides answers, mostly about who does and does not get punished by platforms for behavior that goes against terms of service, which terms of service are just the long fine print that most of us avoid reading when we join an app or a platform, and you just, like, scroll to the end and go, yes, I agree. You want my firstborn child and, like, 7 locks of my hair? Great. Take them.
I have quite literally never read a terms of service, which perhaps I should. They could put anything in there. Like, I would have signed away the rights to my kidneys just to not have to read the fine print. But what's kind of interesting, I'll say, about Trump being banned from Facebook and from YouTube and from Twitter is that people openly and very vocally break Twitter's rules all the time and just get to keep tweeting their thoughts into the abyss that we all spend too much time on. It's why whenever Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey tweets, there's somebody in his mentions being like, yo, can you, like, fix the Nazi problem on here?
The Nazi problem being literal Nazis.
Literal Nazis. But for other people, usually ones who aren't famous or politically controversial or who drive tons of rage engagement on the site, the rules apply with a kind of black and whiteness that leaves no room for nuance, when there should maybe be some.
A recurring theme on this podcast.
Nuance, in case you
missed
it.
Not enough of it. Later in the show, we'll be debuting a new segment called Galaxy Brain. Exciting. But first, we're going to hear from somebody who has spent the last few weeks trying in vain to get her Twitter account reinstated after making a death threat.
But not that kind of death threat.
We've called up legal journalist Rachel Stone to tell us all about her unfortunate experience.
This interview actually hits pretty close to home, specifically my home. ICYMI, please meet my roommate. Rachel, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, guys.
I'm so glad you're here.
Yeah. I'm sorry it's for such a unfortunate event, being permanently banned from Twitter.
Deeply, deeply tragic occurrence.
So how long had you been a Twitter user?
I would say probably around a decade. I made it my sophomore year in college. So quite some time of wasting a ton of time online.
Yeah, your brain is fully mush. It's okay.
Only speak in memes.
I can confirm that.
How would you characterize your Twitter use? Was it like a personal Twitter? Did you use it professionally as a journalist?
Honestly, a little bit of both. I think I kind of towed the line a bit in using it for, like, connecting with actual friends I had, and then using it to, like, either find stories that I wanted to report on for my actual job, and then, like, a fair amount of DMing sources and stuff like that.
So take us through the moment that you got banned. What was the tweet? What prompted it? Just take me through that entire day.
Okay. Well, so it was a work night. I, like almost all other times, was like, I'm definitely going to go to bed at a respectable hour, and then, like, lost, like, a couple hours to scrolling through TikTok. And then, as what happens when you spend way too much time on the app, there's a little man who pops up who's like, hey, you've been scrolling far too long. Like, get yourself some rest. And I got kind of steamed at this because I'm a grown woman, and I took a screenshot of him and like posted a tweet that I thought would maybe make fun of me more than anything, but posted, "I will kill you," with the little picture of the TikTok man. And then the next day, in the middle of my work, I got an email notification that my tweet had violated Twitter's terms of service for specifically tweeting a violent threat at a person or group of people. And I was like, surely someone will understand. Like, I will be able, surely I will be able to tell someone, like, oh, this was a mistake. This wasn't an actual person. It was instead the little man. But, like, one, that's really difficult to explain. And two, it did not work.
I feel like we should explain the little man. It is, in fact, a TikTok. So, like, you're scrolling and this TikTok video pops up and it's a human being. It's not like a cartoon. Like, this is a real human person somewhere out there in the world being like, have a drink of water, stretch your legs.
I understand it's easy to keep watching videos, and trust me, I've been there before. Those videos will still be there tomorrow. So go get some extra sleep, turn your phone off, do yourself that favor, and have a great night.
In Rachel's defense, he has a very punchable face. Twitter, you can't ban me for saying that. But like, he's annoying. I feel like we can all admit that.
I think I'm the outlier here in that he has gotten me to go to bed on more than one occasion.
Maybe you're just a rule follower.
I absolutely am. So you get this email from Twitter. Were you given any opportunities to like delete the tweet or perhaps be sent to temporary Twitter jail? Like any sort of lesser punishment?
Definitely not. Well, I thought I was maybe, I like went immediately online and searched like a various, like, what happens when you've been suspended? And I got a lot of like conservative blog posts that were like, here's what you do when you've been silenced, kind of. But I kind of thought like, this is temporary. This is going to last like 1 to 7 days. There was no option. There was no temporary anywhere in that email. But they gave me the opportunity to appeal my account. So I wrote what I thought was a pretty comprehensive, defensive. I know that this person is a real person, but in this instance, he was not a real person, and tried to appeal. I've appealed now probably like 10 different times.
That's so. What I was going to ask. I'm going to say, that wasn't the last appeal, was it?
Oh, no. Okay. So I took it as like a challenge and like kind of like a fun little quest of like, let me see what it would take to get me unsuspended. And I did think it would be pretty easy if I would be able to explain myself. So in the appeals, I started out kind of like, this was a joke, like not aimed at an actual person, but aimed at, you know, this app function, like TikTok tips, like that's who it was at, everyone. Like, and then I like got a little bit more like trying to appeal to their sensibilities as moderators. And I was like, from a genuine perspective, I do understand what they're trying to do. And then I started trying more of like a legal tack and looking at their like the actual Twitter terms of service. It had only been a couple of days at this point, but I was really spinning out, and then did a couple other things, which is to become a real menace, probably to the Twitter trust and safety team. I went on LinkedIn and I determined that I could find anyone who worked on the trust and safety team and email them with like pleas of my own of like, I'm really sorry to be annoying, but like this happened to me and you have to be able to help me. Found this professor who was also banned on Twitter for a similar thing and tried to email her. I didn't hear back.
You went on a real journey with this.
Oh yeah, it didn't stop there, but yeah.
Please don't stop then. Please continue.
Oh, yeah. Well, so then I went on Quora, and there was a Quora user in a 2012, like, conversation who had been helpful to someone who was banned, and I was able to track him down and find his email, and he actually responded, and he was like, the world is very different than how it is now. Like, Twitter is a very different company, but I can like DM some of my friends to have them check out your appeal. And then the last thing I did was I applied to a job at at Twitter in the trust and safety team, but instead of a resume, I included
Wait. So like a job you do not want, have no intention, are you qualified for the position?
Definitely not. And I told them that. In my first letter of my application, I said, I'm a reporter and longtime Twitter user. I apologize for wasting the time of whoever's reviewing applications for the global lead for the trust and safety team, because I'm most definitely not qualified for this job.
That's so innovative and I think just fully indicative of a person who should be allowed back on Twitter. Your brain doesn't break like that unless you've spent a decade on this platform.
That's what I'm saying. I think this might either get me like permanently exiled. Like they might be so annoyed at all.
Yeah, your
of my
face.
Emails.
Your face is now on like the security desk of all Twitter offices globally. Like you're not allowed on the premises.
Oh man.
Have you made an alternate? Have you made a new account? Have you decided to bite the bullet?
Well, so admitting to doing that would run afoul of Twitter's rules for violating a permanent suspension, which in my defense, language was a little bit unclear. It says if you create a new account, we will suspend that account. It does not say do not use an account that you perhaps already made when you were in high school, because then we'll find that and shut that down within 2 minutes because hypothetically slash allegedly you linked your old account so that people could find you.
Rachel, so that was dumb. I love you so much, but also you linking your banned account and bio of your new account is like, of this entire saga, which because I live with you, I have been privy to from the past, like for the past 2 weeks, just hearing the various kind of like spinning out of like, I'm just going to email all these people. And you're like, I found this professor. And then just hearing this from the background, I was just like, this is completely wild. Like, this is why she's a reporter. You found so many people. But then you told me about linking your account in the bio of the new account. And I was like, Rachel, how are you so smart? It's so dumb at the same time.
Like, I don't know anything.
How long has it been now?
It's been about 2 weeks now. Yeah, 2 weeks today.
Which is a long time.
Yeah, I understand, like, you know, the letter of the law, perhaps I did run afoul. But, like, also, there's a difference between what I did and a bannable offense.
The President of the United States inciting violence upon the nation?
Right, you know, to name that, exactly. Like, there's a bit of a scale issue here.
How does it feel to be in a club with Donald Trump and the MyPillow guy?
Oh God, I forgot about him too. Yeah. Honestly, not so great, because I'm pretty down with their being removed from the app, having pretty clearly violated Twitter's terms of use. But yeah, not so great, because I kind of feel like I'm a bit of a free speech head fighting for my right to post.
This is you getting Joker-fied. Like, it's happening.
This is your Joker origin story.
No. Oh, I just want to be redeemed. Yeah.
It's so funny to me. So Twitter uses a combination, or at least according to Twitter, they use a combination of algorithmic analysis and like human reviewers when someone files a Twitter report. But then there's this whole list of options. Like Twitter can limit how many people could see that tweet, or Twitter could email you and say, hey, your account's suspended until you delete this tweet. It's wild to me that they went like full nuclear. This is who we have to get off Twitter. Rachel Stone, future murderer of the TikTok man.
Who is planning her murder out loud on Twitter.com.
It's also just like so embarrassing at every step of the way for me to have to explain, because like if an actual person was able to like read my account, which is what I've been so obsessed with, like trying to find a real person on the other side of this like bizarre online like Sisyphean battle of like I just need to talk to like one person in charge. But also what might happen is that they're like, nope, checks out, and then I'm forever done. But I hope not. I have faith in people, yeah.
What, if you get reinstated, what will be your first tweet?
My God. Hello?
Is this thing on?
setting up my Twitter.
Oh, yeah. You guys can help me. You guys have better answers.
Yeah, we'll workshop your first tweet.
Yeah, you can workshop it.
That was Jack Dorsey's first tweet. Well, Rachel, I'm sorry for your loss.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Thank you so much for coming on the show. love to see your face in another setting. This has been incredible.
I've really enjoyed it. Yeah, thank you both for having me on.
All right, what a great interview. Coming up after the break, it's time to debut our newest segment, Galaxy Brain.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.
And we're back with our new segment, Galaxy Brain. We're going to take you through the absolute wildest, most broken brain theories on the internet. And this one was introduced to us by our listener, Annie.
In case you're not familiar, the Galaxy Brain meme is a popular image on Twitter where this person's brain is just like increasingly exploding as their theory about something like Atlantis just gets more and more outlandish.
Interesting choice.
I don't know where Atlantis.
The theory of Atlantis is kind of outlandish.
Fortunately for all of you and Rachel, today's topic is not Atlantis because we received absolutely the most gloriously bonkers Galaxy Brain take from a listener. She emailed us this week about the sudden rise of the word chuggy, spelled C-H-E-U-G-Y, chuggy.
I received this email while I was recovering from the second dose of the vaccine, and quite literally nothing made me laugh so hard the entire day than this email. I would also like to thank her because I don't know what the fuck chuggy is. For the longest time, I think until today, I did know how it was pronounced. Is it chuggy? Is it chuggy? Why is it a hard G? What does it stand for? Madison, I really feel like this is, from what I understand, this is kind of a purely white woman phenomenon. So I really need you to take the lead and lead me through the fields of chuggie.
I got you. We're gonna chuggie your own adventure. Sorry. So
chuggie away.
Here's the thing about chuggie. It's a portmanteau of cheap and bougie, and it has been described by the woman who coined it, a 23-year-old software developer, Gabby Rassen, as, quote, people who are slightly off-trend. So things that are chuggy, for example, chevron-patterned clothing, those, like, Gucci and or knockoff Gucci belts where the buckle is just 2 G's. It's not basic, but it's definitely, like, in the genus, class, species. I don't know. I didn't do great in bio class. It's a relative of basic, I would say.
Okay. I was going to say, everything that you're saying to me just sounds like basic. So, like, what is the difference between basic and chuggy?
Chuggy.
Chuggy. God damn.
Chuggy. It's chuggy. It's what you do if you're eating clarified butter.
What?
Chuggy.
Oh, my God.
So I had seen the word chuggy exactly one time in a TikTok a few weeks ago before it got a full-on feature treatment in the New York Times written by Taylor Lorenz. And now I feel like I'm kind of being ghosted by Chugi. Not haunted, because being haunted would imply that I'm like seeing Chugi everywhere, and I'm still not. The original TikTok explaining the concept of Chugi has since been made private. Selah internet, nothing's forever. But here's another one that I think helps explain the meat of what we're talking about.
I am so thrilled to present 101 Chugs. Disney adults, big time Chug if you got married or engaged there. If you willingly choose Bud Light, you're a Chug. Calling yourself a small bean, Chug. Both NASCAR and the WWE are big time Chug. As are gender reveal parties and Comcast. Dare I say, I think Netflix is genuinely Chugy at this point. Being offended at Chugy is ironically very Chugy.
I will say Taylor's piece does take pains to sort of emphasize the nicheness of this term. She does a really good job of sort of identifying it as a thing and not as like a, everyone is saying this. But because the internet works how the internet works, it didn't take long to become a word that everyone online is acting like is totally hyper popular. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, it does. I feel like the way the internet kind of seizes on slang is that there's this kind of feeling that if you see it, it must be for everyone and it must be used by everyone, when the truth is, like, literally every form of language, specific niches and populations use words that you maybe don't need to use. Like, woke, please stop. I beg of
next,
you.
Next week on ICYMI. the TikTok that Taylor Lorenz based this piece on had about 100,000 TikTok views at the time, which is, you know, viral by Twitter measurement, I might say. But on by TikTok's yardstick, that's like...
That's solidly niche. Yeah.
Right. Which I think is does a good job of indicating like how few people are saying Chugi. The other notion I've been working with is the fact that I'm not seeing Chugi everywhere must mean that I am, in fact, Chugi myself.
Or it means what our dear listener Anne thinks, which is that Chugi is a psyop. Who is profiting from this? Anne actually has some thoughts on who's profiting from this psyop.
Okay. Close your eyes and come with me. Picture yourself sitting on a couch. It's May 5th, 2021. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. 1:31 p.m. Your computer dings. You have a new email. The subject... The word Chugi seems like a psyop. Absolutely hooked. You sit straight up on your couch, you open the email, and you read.
Hi, sorry. The subject is clickbaity, but I'm serious. This word is a psyop, or at least trying to sell me something. This TikTok describes the word Chugi. I'm sure you know what it is, but the crux of it is that it's a word we clearly need. It's so much more concise than person who puts the Harry Potter house into their bio and uses Harry Potter to make political points, or Christian girl autumn aesthetic.
Annie then goes on to list 5 reasons why she believes Chugi is a psyop, and frankly, I was more compelled by every one. Number 1, I have never heard a single person say this word in real life. No one. You'll have to take my word for it that this is extremely unusual.
I do take your word for it, Annie. Number 2, with this in mind, every major news outlet had articles about it with the vomit face emoji, seemingly out of nowhere, aside from the TikTok becoming more popular. Check Google Trends. Within the past 5 days, it's literally 0 to 100.
A data-supported theory? Annie, you're speaking my language. Number 3, I'm about to dip into stereotypes. This is a white girl who created it in high school. Her sorority used it, and now it's become popular on TikTok. If a sorority uses it, it's not cool.
Number 4, it doesn't immediately come from any other words. Most slang comes from something.
Number 5, the word feels out of date already. How is it cringe before I heard a single soul say it or write it?
Annie then goes on to say, you may ask, who is benefiting from this psyop? Specifically, who is benefiting from the artificial amplification of an unnaturally fabricated word? Clearly the news outlets, because it's great clickbait. Millennials fucking love the also fabricated fight between themselves and Zoomers, so they're gonna click on that. People who work with young people and who are worried about falling out of date will click on that. So yeah, ad revenue.
And then Annie ends the email by saying, "This could just be a marketing scheme. It's a word we need for brevity. But man, this feels so fucking fake. Absolutely don't take my word for it. Like, some of that could be out of date and wrong. Also, to be clear, I'm 28. So absolutely a one foot in the grave, millennial, and absolutely choogy. Thanks, Annie."
Annie, I love you so much. This email was incredible. Just fully articulates so many things about this specific word. And now I'm convinced it's a psyop. The CIA planted this word.
We never walked on the moon.
Okay, I wasn't going to go that far. We're not getting into, like, JFK conspiracy theories.
JFK is doing just fine. And Chugi is a psyop. And my brain has just expanded extraterrestrially. Full on galaxy brain.
If you, like Annie, have a theory that you just want to share with us, or just any other questions, send it to us at icymi@slate.com or tweet at us on Twitter with the hashtag icymipod.
Seriously, please send us any and all galaxy brain takes. We are standing by.
All right, that's the show. We'll be back in your feed on Wednesday, so definitely subscribe. It's free, and you'll never miss an episode. And if you can, please leave a rating and review in Apple Podcasts. And if you're in a group chat or a Discord server or a Slack group where people ask for podcast recommendations, please consider giving us a shout out. It really helps us find new listeners.
Though if you are the person who left us the review saying they love our classical music podcast, we have questions, but glad you enjoyed the show. ICYMI is produced by Daniel Schrader. Our supervising producer is Derek John. Forrest Wickman is Slate's culture editor, and Gabe Roth is editorial director of audio. See you online.
Or not.
Martina, you ready?
Candace, you ready?
Okay, guys, let's hit the road.